depending on how you run the experiment, it can be either one. As you go higher and higher frequency, the energy per particle gets higher and hotter, per photon gets higher and higher, and it starts acting more and more like a particle. It really is a wave. Is it a wave more than a particle? It appears to be more particle-like. So a cosmic ray acts like a particle. It's a dawn energetic. It's got all kinds of penetration capability. It comes down roaring through that atmosphere and hits your body and does things. And so an awful lot of what you call aging probably is cosmic ray exposure throughout your lifetime. And if you spend a whole lot of time in airplanes at 40,000 feet instead of living down at the surface, you probably, from this effect, would age a little faster. There's a stronger amount of cosmic rays you get up there, less atmospheric attenuation. So by being above the atmosphere, looking at these really potent particles, these high-energy cosmic rays, which is the furthest we've gone in high frequency so far, to my knowledge, with a telescope. It's going to tell us things we've never seen before. As I'm starting to say, the unfortunate thing is you're going to get a kind of a picture out of this thing. And maybe the picture is going to a little bit look like the W map picture, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, WMAP. That picture is it's a mullyweed plot, as they call it. It's a picture of the Earth that's been flattened out, and it's got the green and orange spots to it indicating how much heat is in that particular direction by that measurement. And I think the AMS is going to make a picture somewhat like that. So it's not anywhere near as pretty as the Hubble picture, but to the right kind of an astroscientist, it's going to tell them an awful lot about what's going on. It's a whole big chunk of the spectrum that's never been looked at before, and you can sort of see why. To just begin looking at that portion of the spectrum with a relatively low resolution by optical standards, low resolution telescope, but it can really measure the exact amount of energy of very potent particles. It's 15,000 pounds of hardware that's going to be installed on one of the arms of the International Space Station, brought up by Atlantis that's going to launch in February, but the space shuttle launch in February is right now slated to carry that particular piece of hardware into space. And so it's going to operate for something like 3 years, and we're going to get answers that we've never seen before. It's going to create more questions and more answers. Is that sort of what you're asking for, Paul? K2RIW?
Very good, Dick. It's always been a question. Cosmic, gamma ray, you know, all different, you know, rays. You look at the spectrum, you know, you start with radio and you work all the way up, you know. You hear about the different, you've got the blast from the sun, if you have astronauts flying through space, and you get this coronal mass ejection and it hits the spacecraft. It's not particles that's flying through space that causes the problems. It hits the spacecraft, and it's the particles that spin off after it hits the spacecraft. It hits things, and you know, it hits atoms inside the spacecraft, and then those atoms shoot off, and you wind up with forms of cosmic rays that are hitting the astronauts. So that's one form, and then there's another form that has galactic cosmic rays, and these are the ones that this telescope that's going to be attached to the International Space Station are going to be looking for. So we'll be looking forward to that launch, Dick. No question about it. Back to that WS2M.
Yeah, someday there's going to be an even bigger launch of cosmic ray telescopes, I think. I am guessing they're going to see things, they're going to say, wow, I didn't know that. Where the hell does that much energy come from? A gamma ray burst, and we see a couple of them per year, is so potent, it appears to be the amount of energy of all the stars in a galaxy going supernova simultaneously. 100 million stars, 100 billion stars, 10 billion to 100 billion stars all going supernova simultaneously. Or another way of looking at it is you take the total energy out of the sun for the 10 billion years that the sun is going to exist. We're 5 billion years into its life, you've got 5 billion years left. You take all of that energy, tremendous amount of energy, and you dissipate it in 1 second instead of 10 billion years. That's approximately what a gamma ray burst is. What in the world is doing that? And there's quite a few of them. Mother Nature is telling us something. We haven't figured out what the message is yet. But there's a strong message there. Really potent. Okay. I think it's time that we end for tonight. I've had a long day. This was what I call TechNet number 1323 with the numbering system I came up with 10 or so years ago. But I recently did a calculation. I could easily be 100 numbers wrong. I think it should be closer to 1,400 and something. We'll keep going with the exact same numbering system. And there's something like 3,500 hours of total TechNets that have ever occurred on this particular set of New York City repeaters. And 800 hours of them are recorded on that website, amateurradio.com.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
800 hours, 5 solid years of TechNet, approximately 51 of them per year, one every Sunday. I think we skip about one Sunday per year. We've had very little skips that I can remember. Either Mel or I are usually there. And we intend to keep doing it because I'm getting psychic feedback. I get a word spirit out of me. Maybe I should keep doing it. Not everybody's happy. You can't please everybody. But Mel is pretty sure that we're pleasing more than we don't. What were you about to say, John?
Dick, I just wanted to express my appreciation for both you and Mel and your ability to bring that wonderful award to the TechNet. I think that's an achievement. And if Mel could answer a question that I have, if he chooses to answer, I'd like to touch base with him on that, if I may.
Very fine. For a couple of reasons, I've got to sign out. I'm going to say 73, you all, and be kind to each other. Particularly kind to the people who ask what you think are dumb questions. That's a philosophy, as you can tell. Mel, you can take over from here, and the choice is yours. And I hope your health continues to improve. You got to eat the right foods. You and I have already had that discussion. I know you're already working on that, and so am I. You are what you eat. Take the right medications, go to the right physicians, do the right testing, eat the right foods, sleep enough, treat your body right. Back to you, Mel, and I'm out for now. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick, yeah, go get some rest. You've had a really long day. I'm dead. I apologize. I wish I would have been there. I put all my energy this week and say kept my fingers crossed, but just didn't work out that way. Good luck again, and yes, we will continue. Long as you want to do it, I'm right there with you. You know that. We appreciate it all, and like I say, the emails don't lie. Okay, let me pick up the question for John before we got a couple of minutes left. Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Mel. I have a friend who has a similar affliction. He was in country, and I was just wondering, is the affliction a type of malaria or an ingested microorganism, something like that? And if you don't answer if you don't feel like it, believe me, I understand.
No big secret, bacteria. That I know when I drank water, situation was very desperate. Heat was beyond anything. I mean, can't even describe the climate. And the person that I did ask there, our so-called guide, people, you know, that brought up in that type of situation are acclimated. And so I'm sure they have an immunity to a number of things that a boy from Brooklyn, a nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn, most likely was never meant to be exposed to. And so it was quoted to me, well, if the animals are drinking the water over there, you can also. I think it was the wrong advice, John, over.
Okay, Mel, yes, a very similar situation, and I understand. Thank you for answering the question. But you take care, and have a great week, and I hope you're improvement is accelerated as soon as those drugs kick in. But you be careful, and I look forward to talking to you again following Sunday. So this is KC2WGB. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, John, thank you for the good wishes. I appreciate it from everybody that did express their, either through emails or on the air, sort of, you know, all of a sudden a missing person. So it was very, you know, heartwarming to see that people do take an interest. Yeah, we'll do our best, and sure it'll pass. I've had this before. Takes its time, like anything else. I'm sure we all get some kind of affliction, and you got to have a positive attitude, I think, is part of the healing process. Okay, anything else from anybody before I close the tech net? This is K2KEY. Okay, then with that, I'll say thank you to all those who are listening via Echo Link or over the Internet. Thank you for your support. And also, yes, we sort of missed picking up a few of the email questions today, which I apologize for, but this subject of bioradiation supposedly, you know, and has always been a hot number, especially as it does affect amateur radio indirectly. So I'm sure that the discussion is well worth the time. 73 is all. I'm hoping against all that I will be back here next Sunday. This is K2KEY. Good night, all.
Good night, Mel. KC2WGB clear.
73s, and hope you're feeling better, Mel. KC2QIQ. John, if you're still there, I got a question for you. How did things work out for you with stopping by the airport?
KC2WGB. As usual, Glenn, your information was perfect. I should have left maybe 10 minutes sooner. I left Wesley out in the cold there. I could not believe the traffic jam at the ramp. The belt was pretty decent, but everything you said was perfect. I don't know if you heard me before when I was speaking to other people. I went on the website and actually tracked the aircraft on the map and sort of timed it. I was looking at him at about 350 miles out. He was over Maine. So it all worked just like you said. It was great.
Glad it all worked out well, and you're back safely. Wesley's back home safely. All is good. Okay, guys, have a good one. 73s, and have a good week. KC2QIQ.
Yeah, Glenn, to Jerry's dismay, I'll be back on the air tomorrow. KC2QIQ, this is KC2WGB. Good evening, and have a great tomorrow.
Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1735 with a release date of Friday, November 12, 2010. The follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QSC. Ham Radio continues its emergency response in Indonesia. The South African ham helped save two on board a stricken yacht. The FCC closes a number of loopholes in the Vanity call sign program. Dayton says it's time to start sending in nominations for the 2011 Hamvention Award. And W5KUB to provide a day-long streaming video tour of MFJ. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1735, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
Amateur Radio is doing its part after a pair of disasters hit Indonesia back-to-back. Jason D., VK2LAW of the WIA News, has the latest.
Following two natural disasters, an earthquake-triggered tsunami, and separately an erupting volcano, radio amateurs are providing their help as the enormous response effort continues. Orari, Organisasi Amateur Radio Indonesia, International Affairs Coordinator, YB0AZ, says their Communication and Rescue Task Force has joined the team of the Disaster Management of Directorate General Post and Telecommunications, Ministry of Communication and Informatics, Republic of Indonesia. They've been operating in the field and provide communication support to the government government and communities in the area where the eruption of Mount Merapi and the earthquake followed by tsunami on West Sumatra. Media reports that at least 170 died, mostly drowned after the tsunami triggered by a 7.7 magnitude offshore earthquake struck the Mentawai Islands. While on the island of Java, several hundred kilometres away, 29 were killed when the volcano Mount Merapi erupted, releasing clouds of hot gas, rocks and lava into the air. I'm Jason, VK2LAW.
The remoteness of the affected areas, poor communications, and the ongoing disaster response and relief efforts are likely to see the Organization of Amateur Radio of Indonesia Communications and its Rescue Task Force involved for some time to come. A real-time rescue at sea with the aid of a South African sailor and ham radio operator, Hamnet's Francois Botha, ZS5BUU, is here with the details.
Roy Cook, ZS5CB, was instrumental in the rescue of two yachtsmen aboard a yacht called Hobo that ran into difficulties off the coast of Mozambique. Roy had intercepted a call for assistance via a ham radio marine VHF monitoring frequency and contacted NSRI Richards Bay on Saturday afternoon, the 30th of October. He reported that the yacht Philigic had, by chance, come across the yacht with two Frenchmen on board and in a desperate state of disrepair, some 200 nautical miles offshore from the Mozambique coast. The yacht Hobo, unfortunately, had been caught up in severe tropical weather out at sea and had not only capsized and corrected itself, but the two yachtsmen had lost most of their food, drinking water, and that the boat had been severely damaged. Their radio equipment and antenna system was non-functional, with the result they could not radio for help. Richards Bay NSRI, under the control of Dorian Robertson, indicated that the yacht was too far out for a rescue operation, but the team were placed on alert to monitor the situation. Roy, in the meantime, had been able to maintain contact with the other yacht and kept the Richards Bay NSRI up to date with information on the progress of the two yachts. Once the yachts were in South African waters by Monday afternoon around 1600 hours, the Richards Bay NSRI launched the rescue craft and rendezvoused with the Hobo 12 nautical miles offshore in a 25 knot northeasterly wind and a 1 to 2 meter swell. A tow line was attached to the yacht and safely brought to the safety of Richards Bay Harbour. Both the yachtsmen were unhurt but will spend quite a while repairing the yacht before they continue on their journey. Reporting on Hamnet, this is Francois Botha, ZS6BUU.
The final destination of the damaged yacht is at this stage unknown, but it may be a long time before it's back at sea. The FCC has closed some loopholes in the vanity call sign program. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, reports from the city of brotherly love.
It has been nearly 14 years since the vanity call sign system was rolled out by the Federal Communications Commission, and in that time, tens of thousands of amateurs have taken part. The regulatory panel decided only last year it might be time to revisit some issues that it felt were either left unresolved or needed clarification. Now the FCC's report and order are out regarding the vanity call sign system, and there are some adjustments. There is one, though, that the FCC did not go for, a request to eliminate the fee for a first-time application for a vanity call sign and the renewal fee for that call sign. The fee for each will remain $13.30. A terminal license, like the standard amateur radio license, is 10 years. Something also contained deeper in the report and order was discussion and a decision regarding restricting an applicant's vanity call sign to the call region in which he or she lives. The FCC notes in discussion of this issue that, quote, the applicant's choice of vanity call signs would be reduced to 10% or less of the call signs that would otherwise be assignable to the station, unquote. The FCC continues, quote, limitation based upon the person's place of residence could easily be circumvented by using a mailing address in another call sign region, unquote. Therefore, the FCC decided there will be no change in the existing rules which allow someone, say, in the third call area to apply for a vanity call sign in any area of the country, including the third call area. What else? From now on, any new trustees for a club station license or vanity call sign may not serve as a trustee for multiple clubs and station licenses, but those who already do so will be grandfathered, meaning they can continue to do so for now. And there are also some new restrictions on who can file applications on behalf of a club regarding a change in trustee. That application must now be signed by an officer of the club making the application to the club station call sign administrator. The FCC says this should, quote, prevent a departing trustee from making off with the club license and call sign or refusing to agree to a change in trustee, unquote. The FCC also says this requirement will also address, quote, instances in which a trustee becomes incapacitated, unquote. Finally, what about that two-year wait until the call sign of a deceased ham can be assigned to someone else in the vanity system? The FCC decided to clarify that issue by stating that the countdown, so to speak, would begin on the date of death of the licensee and not the notification date to the FCC. In addition, the FCC decided to add a 30-day waiting period before that canceled license due to death is put into the database. This to make it available to give an opportunity to all to compete for the license. What about the close relative exception? That is, a close relative being put first in line to apply for the call sign of a deceased relative as a memorial to that person. Well, the FCC says that's now the rule and clarified who is covered. Listen carefully, here's what the FCC decided. The term, quote, in-law is to include only a parent, step-parent, sibling, or step-sibling of a licensee's spouse and the spouse of a licensee's sibling, step-sibling, children, or stepchild, or the spouse of a licensee's spouse's sibling or step-sibling, unquote. And that expands the pool of relatives quite a bit. Finally, the FCC says if you held a license and let it expire, you'll be able to get it back within a two-year window before it's entered into the vanity call system. One more thing for those of you who still might hold a novice license. The FCC now says you can be the trustee of a club station license. The FCC reasoned that the license classification, quote, is not a reason to prohibit them from being club station trustees. The frequency and operating privileges are determined solely by the class of the operator license held by the control operator rather than the license held by the club station trustee. A lot to digest, I'm sure. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V in Philadelphia.
In summarizing the changes, the Commission said that it believes that the public interest will be served by amending its rules in order to make the Amateur Services Vanity call sign system more equitable and transparent. It also believes that changes in the rules governing club station licensing will promote a more equitable and administratively efficient licensing process. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W6JW repeater serving Amateur Radio Newsline's home city of Santa Clarita, California, just north of Los Angeles. The Radio Society of Great Britain is beginning an investigation of a mystery signal in the 500 kilohertz band. This after UK radio amateurs who operate from 501 to 504 kilohertz over the past month have reported reception of a wideband signal between 498 and 502 kilohertz. The RSGB is looking into the matter. It says that the signal may be an early trial of a so-called e-navigation system that the Maritime Service is planning to propose for this part of the spectrum at the WRC-12 preparation meeting. Radio Amateurs of Canada began its National Field Organization Review Project Monday, November 8th, with the assistance of Hugh Lines, VA7HU, Ian Snow, VA3QT, and others. Guidelines were adopted to review the entire Radio Amateurs of Canada field organization, including, but not limited to such aspects as the overall structure, the group's focus, the training it affords members, and several other points crucial in an emergency communications and public service environment. According to the Radio Amateurs of Canada news release, this will be an ongoing process that will look at all aspects of how the program operates and how it can better deliver amateur radio resources to those it serves. Canadian hams looking to assist are asked to contact Doug Mercer, VO1DTM. Mercer is the Radio Amateurs of Canada Vice President Field Services. His email is vo1dtm@hotmail.com. An improperly disposed of personal rescue beacon recently caused a major tea hunt in New Zealand. Graham Kemp of the WIA News has more.
Rescue services were alerted in NZL as an aircraft flying over the Bay of Plenty picked up a distress signal in the region. A helicopter from Rotorua narrowed down the search area. Radio spectrum management traced it to a refuge transfer station, the beacon located in the recycling center. The beacon was operating on the old 121.5 and 243 meg frequency. The incident serves as a reminder for people all over the world to dispose of old beacons properly, either by disconnecting the battery or taking the beacon to police, Coast Guard, or a beacon retailer.
For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News in Australia.
No word yet on who the locator beacon belonged to or how it wound up in a trash dump. Illegally downloaded pirated films are no longer Hollywood's worst nightmare, but that's only because of a newer criminal enterprise in the form of equally illegal offshore subscription services. Fred Fobey, W8HDU, has the rest of the story.
Foreign businesses, often with criminal connections, collect illegally obtained movies into what are called cyber lockers. Cyber lockers are similar to internet storage sites used by individual consumers to squirrel away pirated video. But news reports say that the for-profit version has spawned an array of sophisticated and seemingly reputable websites selling unlimited digital movies for as little as $5 a month. Fred Hunsberry is the chief operating officer for Paramount Pictures. He recently detailed the evolution of the latest in professional electronic movie piracy methods for hundreds of European movie theater operators attending an opening day seminar at Cinema Expo. According to Hunsberry, it's quite common for Hollywood movies to be made available via illegal for-profit websites within days of theatrical release. He notes that the advent of global releasing now allows the proliferation of individual titles into an array of languages within the first month of the theatrical debut. When movies are later released on DVD and Blu-ray disc, the illegal cyberlocker sites upgrade the quality of the video offered by the illegal camera-recorded images to pristine digital copies. Cyberlocker-based businesses operate from Russia, Ukraine, Colombia, Germany, Switzerland, and elsewhere. Several even selling advertising to mainstream, often unwitting, advertisers. I'm Fred Volby, W8HDU.
Paramount Hunsberry added these cyber lockers now represent the preferred method by which consumers are enjoying pirated content. The Desert Rats Club of Palm Springs and Palm Springs DX Club are holding the Palm Springs Tanfest January 29th. The gates open at 9:30 a.m. and close at 4:50 p.m. local Pacific Standard Time. Admission is only $1, and that includes a raffle ticket. Also during the event, the Desert Rats will operate a special event station, WD6RAT, on 3.672, 7.240, and 14.251 megahertz, with talk into the Hamfest on the 146.94 WD6RAT repeater. Repeater access requires a 107.2 hertz subaudible access tone. For more information, including directions to the venue, take your web browser to desertrats.am. The Dayton Hamvention is soliciting nominations for its 2011 Technical Excellence, Special Achievement, and Amateur of the Year Awards. Also, by popular demand, the Hamvention has decided to continue its new Radio Club of the Year Award and to make it a permanent addition to the Hamvention Awards program. By way of review, the Amateur of the Year is for the special person who has made a long-term or lifelong commitment to the advancement of amateur radio. He or she must be a well-rounded individual who has contributed to our hobby in some outstanding way. The Special Achievement Award is for the person who has made an outstanding contribution to the advancement of amateur radio. This award usually given to a respected amateur who spearheaded a single significant project. The Technical Excellence Award is presented to a radio amateur that has made an outstanding technical advancement in the field of amateur radio. And lastly, the new Club of the Year Award recognizes a radio club's accomplishments, activities, and its service to the public. To be considered for any of these awards, completed nominations must be submitted no later than January 15, 2011. Nomination forms can be found at www.hamvention.org in the awards section or with your Yahoo Group's login directly at tinyurl.com/2ALOX4G. Send your completed nominating forms and substantiating documentation to Hamvention 2011. Attention Awards Committee. Post Office Box 964, Dayton, Ohio, 45401-0964. Again, the cutoff date to submit nominations is January 15, 2011. Some names in the news. First up, Ken Cott, W8ROG of Macomb County, Michigan. Cott has recently been named Knight of the Legion of Honor for his actions during World War II. The award notification issued by Consul General of France, Graham Paul, reads in part, and we quote, "This outstanding distinction is the highest honor that France can bestow upon those who have achieved remarkable deeds for France. It's also a sign of true gratitude for your invaluable contribution to the liberation of France during these difficult times in the history of our nation." End of quote. In addition to radiomen and reconnaissance duty with the 3rd Armored Division in Europe during World War II, Cott also taught Morse code in the Army. Ken Cott, W8ROG, who at age 90 is still an ardent CW operator, is also the father of former world radio editor Nancy Cott, WZ8C. And word from the ARRL that Steve Ryan, N2ITF of Asheville, New York, has been appointed section manager of the ARRL Western New York section, effective November 2nd. Ryan will finish out the term of Scott Bauer, W2LC, who announced his resignation for personal reasons October 31st. Bauer had served as section manager since January of 2000. ARRL Membership and Volunteer Programs Department Manager Dave Patton, NN1N, made the Ryan appointment in consultation with Atlantic Division Director Bill Edgar, N3LLR. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. A New York City developer's plan to build a new 67-story building in Midtown Manhattan is drawing a closer look from the region's broadcasters. They're worried that the structure could partially block their transmissions from atop the nearby Empire State Building. Bruce Tennant, K6TZW, reports.
The skyscraper named 15 Penn Plaza is to be built just 2 blocks from the Empire State Building. Empire, as it is known in the broadcast field, has been the home for most FM and television broadcasters in the city since the 9/11 Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks that leveled the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center. As a result, Empire is currently home to 19 FM stations and most of the city's television transmitters, and it served that same purpose before many stations moved to the taller World Trade Center. Vornado Realty Trust is the developer behind the proposed 1,190-foot building at 15 Penn Plaza. By comparison, Empire is 1,250 feet plus a 204-foot antenna structure. Some local observers agree that 15 Penn Plaza could cast a significant signal shadow southwest of the city and in particular affect FM listening in the New York suburbs. Jim Stagnitto is the director of engineering for New York Public Radio. He says that he's concerned about both of his FMs at the Empire State Building. Josh Haddon is Stagnitto's counterpart for Clear Channel Radio in New York. He says that his company is studying the different potential impacts the building could have on his facilities, adding that they are watching the development of the plan very closely. Reporting for the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The building's designer, Pelly Clark Pelly Architect, is known for designing some of the world's tallest buildings, including the Petronas Towers in Malaysia. According to observers, Vornado officials have thus far not indicated any interest in building broadcast facilities atop the new tower. Turning to ham radio space-related news, word that astronauts Joe Acaba, KE5DAR, and Aki Hoshide, KE5DNI, participated in simulated ARIS school contact with students attending Ralph McCall School in Airdrie, Alberta, Canada. This on Tuesday, October 26. The simulated contacts are training sessions for the astronaut hams using ARIS-equivalent equipment to make terrestrial-based amateur radio contacts. Acaba, who was slated to fly with the Expedition 31 team, also had an ARIS refresher course on Wednesday, October 27, for his upcoming mission in 2012. NanoSail D, carrying an amateur radio beacon on 437.305 MHz, is planned to launch on November 20th. The spacecraft will be carried into space on board Minotaur 4 rocket. Once in space, NanoSail D will be in a low Earth orbit at 9 degrees inclination. The orbit will be elliptical, 685 kilometer apogee and 340 kilometer perigee, degrading to 200 kilometers at which time it will deorbit. While in space, NanoSail D will transmit a beacon signal on 437.305 MHz, operating AX-25 protocol with 1 half-second burst every 5 seconds. South Africa's annual Remembrance Day service was to be transmitted Sunday, November 14th on the radio program Amateur Radio Mirror International. The service, conducted by the Reverend Jan Kramer, ZS6JRK, is a memorial of radio amateurs who lost their lives in service of the country. The script reading was to be in English and the service in Afrikaans. Clubs wishing to retransmit that service on their local repeater can download an MP3 audio file. Send an email to armi@sarl.org.za to receive details of the URL. The next United Kingdom SOS Day will take place on the 28th of January, and the Lifeboat Amateur Radio Society will once again be organizing SOS Radio Week to coincide with it. SOS Radio Week is a 9-day, non-competitive operating occasion held as a fundraising event by the United Kingdom Radio Amateurs for the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. Taking part is easy. If you're a UK ham, simply take your web browser to sosradioweek.org.uk to register. On the air, listen out for the ham radio festivities surrounding the 20th anniversary of the reunification of Germany taking place in the city of Bremen. To help in the celebration, the Amateur Radio Club of Bremen has activated the special call sign DL20YDM until August 31st, 2011. If you work this one, please QSL as directed on the air. NDX, the Buddies of the Caribbean, the Expedition, a group specializing in 100 watt or less low power operation and the Buddy Poles portable antenna system, is headed back to St. Lucia. They'll be there from December 5th to the 13th, operating portable J6 from a North Shore Villa location. There will be three stations in operation at various times on 160 centimeters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. Call signs to listen for are W3FF, N7UN, K8EAB, W7ZT, N4LA, K4MK, NX8L, and W4OKW. QSL with a self-addressed stamped envelope to each operator's home call or electronically using Logbook of the World or EQSL. And keep an ear out for DL2AH on Tristan da Cunha, a ZD9AH, until December 6th. This is not a de-expedition, so we plan to operate mainly SSB on 40, 20, 17, 12, and 10 meters as time permits. Also, some RTTY activity during the last 2 weeks of November. QSL via DL2AH direct or via the Bureau. F4BXW is on the air from Gabon as TR8GV. He'll be there through November 23rd, operating SSB from the capital city of Libertyville. If you make contact, QSL to F4BXW. VK4KEV will be on Macquarie Island for about 18 months. During his spare time, he'll sign VK0KEV in SSB and digital mode, mostly on 40 and 20 meters. QSL is directed on the air. And lastly, N0TG reports that the Sable Island DX operation is back on the calendar. The rescheduled dates are December 6th through the 13th. According to N0TG, several critical details were resolved sooner than expected. More is online at www.cy0dexpedition.com. And finally this week, it's well known in ham radio circles that Martin Jew, K5FLU, made the Great American Dream a reality when he formed MFJ Enterprises back in 1972. And now you can get to meet him and tour his facilities thanks to ham radio webcaster Tom Medlin, W5KUB. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the details.
Martin Jew, K5FLU's first ham radio product, was a high selectivity filter that would enable a receiver to more easily separate Morse code signals on the crowded high-frequency amateur band. The success of this receiver add-on turned out to be the seed for a company that has grown into MFJ Enterprises that we know today. And if you have some time free on Tuesday, November 16th, you can get to see it all and get to know Martin in a very special day-long webcast produced and hosted by Tom Medlin, W5KUB. According to Tom, the live webcast will include a tour of MSJ along with its subsidiary companies, including Cushcraft, Hygain, Ameritron, Mirage, and Vectronics. The webcast will also show all the engineering, design, and manufacturing aspects of the ham gear that's now found in stations all around the world. Most of all, you'll get to meet the company's founder, Martin Jew, K5FLU, and even get to ask some questions over Tom's two-way interactive W5KUB.com website. So tune in on Tuesday, November 16th, to this very special all-day tour of MFJ Enterprises to learn how the Great American Dream has come true in Starkville, Mississippi. A day of ham radio fun brought to you courtesy of Tom Medlin, W5KUB, and his interactive website at W5KUB.com. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITS. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles, the City of Angels. Don?
Again, that's Tuesday, November 16th for the special streaming video tour of MFJ and the chance to meet the company's founder, Martin Jew, K5FLU. All of this in a live webcast at W5KUB.com. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Fan DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. That's located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. And please don't forget that in association with the Newark Amateur Radio Society that we're currently conducting a survey to determine where these weekly Amateur Radio Newsline reports are replayed on the air. If you're a bulletin station that transmits these weekly newscasts or a listener who has the following information, we need you to supply us the call sign of the repeater or bulletin station making the transmission, the frequency where it can be heard, the time and day and days of the week it's broadcast, the time zone, and the estimated audience you think it has. Please email that information along with your name and call sign to arnschedule@gmail.com. Again, that's arnschedule@gmail.com. And as always, we thank you for your assistance in the survey. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ICF at the editor's desk, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2010, and all rights are reserved.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
To the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Thank you. Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
2VL repeater system. Good morning. Time is 2:39 a.m.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
The time is 2:49 a.m. Good morning. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL amateur radio repeater system. W2VL repeater system. The time is 3:10 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Babylon Town Hall on Sunrise Highway, up to Wellwood, Well, with south, the Hoffman, Hoffman East, Great East Neck Road, Great East Neck Road, west, the 109 West, back to Sunrise Highway, and back to Town Hall.
You know, I wouldn't even want to drive that on my bicycle. Much less run it. It's amazing that those people can condition themselves to run something like that.
And my oldest daughter, a bunch of her friends, they did the 5K. And then my youngest daughter, she did the route in about 2 minutes. And she was up in a News 12 helicopter flying above the route.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. How'd she end up with that?
I got a member of the club who's a bigwig. Cablevision last year, he took his own personal helicopter off with my daughter in it. This year he made the news department cover the event. So News 12 did a pre-race interview Friday, and then they covered the whole race thing yesterday. The beginning ceremonies and the beginning of the run, the finish line of the run, a couple of interviews.
They did good.
They did really good. All came from one phone call to a certain individual who happens to be a member of our radio club over in Lindenhurst.
Well, that is pretty good. That worked out pretty well for you guys. That's a good thing. Hold on 1 second. My boss is trying to call me, as you can hear. Hold on.
Yep, no problem.
Good morning, John, and to ZEP.
And to ZEP.
Good morning, W2HCB. So from listening to you and Greg for the last minute or two, sounded as if yesterday's event went off without a hitch.
I wouldn't say without a hitch. It's the typical stuff, you know, people don't listen in net control situations and, you know, stuff like that, where I actually called one of my own operators on a cell phone and yelled at him.
Oh, what did he do?
And he gets to his spot, same spot he's had for the last 2 years, you know, it's an exit to the McDonald's, and he puts his, we put up the barricade, and, you know, the cops come by and tell you, you know, make sure nobody goes around the barricade, you know, call your guy, and they got a direct number to us, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, he's on the net frequency. Other people are trying to find their locations. That's why we're setting up, you know. And he's going on and on and on. Oh, the cop said this, the cop said that, the cop said this, and I talked to the cop over here, and this cop just said he didn't know, and this, and blah, 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 blah. To the point where the net control told him, you know, station, stand by for a phone call.
Ah, yes, personal traffic on a net.
There's a little bit of a traffic jam over here because we got the road closed. Well, what do you expect? We have the road closed for a run. Yes, it's going to back traffic up. There's nothing we can do about it. But the woman says she's going to run over the barricade. So I said, okay, go to the alternate frequency. Make sure you have the plate number. I will have my phone in one hand. Okay? Unbelievable. But on and on and on about traffic reports. I'm like, guys, we're not here to talk about the traffic.
Then two officers here. I got to clear. I got to run into work. All right, you guys have a great day. And John, I hope your daughter got some pictures from up there in the helicopter. You got to put them on Facebook or the website or something. All right, take care, guys. Then two officers here. Stay. I'll be clear.
7-3, Greg.
7-3, Greg. So, John, can you just imagine what kind of havoc that guy would have caused if he had gotten onto one of the logistics nets of the New York Marathon?
Yeah, but, you know, what kills me is it's two operators from out by, that are directly involved with us, you know? And the one guy just asks the stupidest questions, stuff that doesn't concern us. You know, it's just ridiculous. It really is. We have one medical emergency, and I sent the woman a personal email, and then an official email as the radio officer of the town of Babylon, commending her on the fine job she did in passing along the information. And she is not affiliated with our club or our Aries group, or lives in Suffolk County.
You don't have to be affiliated with a group to keep a level head and pass the information quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, well, you probably know who she is. Casey Two, Sierra Yankee Mike.
Sierra Yankee Mike. I have no idea. Don't know the call letters.
Robin.
Oh, yeah, I remember her. She hasn't been on here in a while.
Yep, she showed up yesterday morning, and she did a phenomenal job. Phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal job. And that was the other thing. We had a medical situation, and one of the stupid operators, again, from my group, is yelling his post number that the first runner has passed his location. Meanwhile, we don't even care what runner passes your location because it's all electronic. We're not involved in scoring or anything, so we can care less, you know? We just want to know when the tail end of the race passes you, then you can, you know, secure your location. And I see runners coming, and they tell them, stand by, stand by. But I see the runners coming. So the next control finally said, all stations, stand down. You know, I'm over in the Suffolk County command vehicle, and I'm trying to figure out the woman, she's calling, those guys were stepping on her. I'm like, this is ridiculous, and I had caught a call sign, you know. So I knew the post number and got it to PD, so 1006-10-1010, rescue pulled up. Hold on here, I got a phone call, W2A Civic.
And 2EB. Good morning to the other John. How are you?
Good morning, Gary. Morning, John. Yeah, Robin's call is KC2SYM. She's does the Aries net every Monday. And I worked with her the whole day for Ocean to Sound as net control. So, very good. Very good operator. Very calm. And Gary, you would be amazed at this net, because there was just like constant chatter on the radio. You couldn't even get in. I couldn't even get in. They didn't even know who I was. Because I said, you know, I'm going to be like what I was taught long time ago. You know, keep the radio frequency clear unless you have something really important to say. I set up my barriers. Like, I was like laughing. Constant chatter. Oh, my God. Okay, I guess it goes back to you if John's still on the telephone.
Well, John, you and I have both done net controls over the years, and one of the things net controls have to do is politely tell someone to shut up, that we don't need that information, keep the frequency clear for important traffic.
I'm back, W2HCB. That was the panic call for my wife.
Panic. Yeah, it's, but it was like, just like, there's a person here that wants to go past the barriers, what do I do? I was like, people come up to my barrier, I go like this, I'm sorry, I can't allow you to go across. Just like that. But I have to get a prescription for my mother. I'm sorry. Just can't get it going. What am I going to do? I don't know. You're going to have to wait until it rains. That's it. Too bad. You're at it. You're out. And that's it. I don't have to go, like, call net control to, what do I do? What do I do? Gary?
John, you're recognized? I don't know. That's one situation that we've never had to worry about in that